Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
I played the game.
You played the game.
I played the game.
What game?
Football.
The game.
You did?
Yeah.
The ball game.
Yeah.
Pee-wee football?
No.
High school football?
No.
Just the game?
No. I played football.
Oh, okay.
Video game.
Oh, football. Okay. There we go.
Madden. Gotcha. It's great. You recommend it.
Yeah, it's a great game.
That's how I learned all the formations, you know?
Is it?
You know, bootleg and such?
My favorite thing is, it's not condescending at all, but like my favorite thing is that sometimes you have people that come up and they, you know, Madden, you played Madden and all that, and you have people that come and ask you plays, and they use the direct verbiage from like the Madden playbook, and they ask you about the particular play, and it's like,
and you're
that's awesome. Like, you learned your own version of your playbook. Like, I actually think that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
That Madden can actually kind of teach you in some aspects of the game. It can help you identify what some coverages are and all that.
Now, no,
if you think you're
cool.
An expert because of it, that's a different thing, but
yeah.
I think it's cool.
No joke. I'm serious. When I was in college, I was in a band. It was like a jazz fusion band. The keyboard player knew nothing about sports at all, okay?
Yeah.
And this band ended in, 2002? I talked to him 2 years later. He had been dating this gal in the two-year interim there since I had talked to him. She was really into sports and really into playing Madden. I guess he really got into doing that with her. And when I talked to him in, 2004 or 5, he was the assistant coach of the high school football team.
Whoa!
Because he was the music teacher at the school.
Yeah.
And because he was playing all this Madden all the time, he started hanging around the
football
team.
I hope he was, dominating. Like, his team was just crushing.
I don't know how good they were. I mean, it's pretty competitive out in Indiana.
You can learn a lot if you dedicate yourself to it and you put the time in. Like, I didn't watch football growing up at all and didn't know a lot about it. And I feel like I'm always afraid to say that because there's already this thing that people unfairly use against women, which is, oh, you never played. Do you know how many people either working in or around football or covering football never played football?
Zero.
A lot. But you have to think, if you throw yourself into it for 10 years, if you spend 10, 11, 12 years doing nothing but reading and writing about it and watching it, you pick up a lot.
Yeah, if you pursue anything doggedly.
Like, you're telling me when you went to college, you just automatically knew exactly what your job was? No, you spent time in researching it.
I was a biologist when I was a freshman.
When I was born, I was a biologist.
Anyway, so I guess the lesson there, kids, is if you want to study football, then play Madden.
That's exactly what we're saying. Yes.
Part of it. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Be an astronaut.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's how I feel when I watch the 49ers and when I watch George Kittle specifically. That guy, right now, the 49ers are what the Seahawks were in 2013. They've just got that intimidation. They've got that swagger, I guess I should be saying. They've got these qualities, these intangibles that I feel like the Seahawks don't have. Now, the Seahawks do have a lot of intangibles, just different ones. So what do we think they need for next year? I'll start with that one.
Okay.
Intimidation. When you go up against Russell Wilson, we heard Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith the other day say it was like chasing a chicken in a yard with no fence or something to that effect. Now, that's great, but I don't know that that qualifies as intimidation necessarily. When you line up against George Kittle as a defensive player, I would imagine you're, maybe not intimidated, but you're a little bit worried because he might go out there and just flat out own you. What do you guys think about that?
Well, it's a huge part of this game. I mean, that's the reality of football. It is a physical game. It is a game that is won and lost, won in the trenches, but also about who is more physical. And I think that that's a big part of this thing. So when you look at the defensive line up front, you look at the offensive line, that is why traditionally Pete Carroll, because of the running style, he has wanted more running, better running offensive linemen because they're more physical at the point of attack. The defensive line this year, they tried to make roster decisions that would help them get better in the run game. It didn't work out for them. Jaron Reed wasn't the same player that they were banking on him being Al Woods getting suspended at the end of the season didn't work out very well. Puna Ford had flashes, but to me, again, flashes. It wasn't enough consistent play, dominant play at the line of scrimmage. And then at the other levels, you talk about the linebacker level. As good as that crew was, you didn't feel the impactful plays in every single game.
Are we talking just about making big hits?
Yeah, big hits.
Because I kind of wish, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I kind of wish that we had somebody who would spout off in the media.
Oh, so like a Richard Sherman.
Just be a jerk.
Tom misses Richard Sherman.
You want attitude. You want more attitude.
I want more attitude. I mean, look, I thought everything Richard did was self-serving. I don't know that that has to be part of the pie, but yeah, somebody who is going to get in the headlines, and when the other teams read about it, they might feel a little intimidated. Yeah, absolutely. I want that.
Someone who's not afraid to mix it up or let people know how they feel.
Yeah.
Right? Like they're willing to send a message to other teams. To me, that is part of it, but you've got to be able to back it up on the field. And I don't care if a guy doesn't, if he has a boisterous personality that's willing to do that. What I do care about is that they bring that boisterous personality onto the field with aggression and violence with their hitting. That's really what I care about.
I enjoy interviewing the Griffin brothers. I really do. But I feel like at that position, that's kind of where you need a diva. And so, you know.
On defense?
Well, at corner.
Yeah.
That's where you need it. So, you know, let's go draft one or something. All right. Well, let's see. How about physicality? That goes kind of with what you're saying, or it can anyway.
Yes, physicality is a big part of it, and that's something that they were missing. They were missing team speed. They were missing physicality on the defensive side of the ball. To me, that was a very obvious thing. The other side of it, too, is for the Seahawks, I think it would be a very nice change of pace for them to be able to play with Will Dissly on the field the entire season rather than have to worry about this jumbo package with George Fant. I mean, it's been nice, and it's something that's really cool and unique to the Seahawks. But, I mean, think about that. Will Dissly, if healthy, can play that role because he's such a great blocking tight end, and also he's a great receiving threat. So to be able to have, you know, from across your skill position players, that physicality to me is really important. But I think they have fun on offense. I think that the intimidation, the physicality all leads to fun for defensive players.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at it for me, I think one of the biggest intangible things that they need to improve on is outside perspective. And whether that's within the coaching staff, whether that's Pete Carroll leading the charge amongst Ken Norton Jr. and Brian Schottenheimer, I don't think Brian Schottenheimer needs to change his whole approach, but just continue to keep growing from year one to year two to year two to year three. But if that means hiring outside people to come in and maybe not be position coaches, but to be advisors, to be, hire an analytics staff, hire a game managing.
Do they not have an analytics staff already?
I'm sure. Not that's vocal. I don't think that they have one dedicated to an analytics staff. I think they have people that look at analytics, but not one that's deep dived into it every single day that's providing them the analytics that we're talking about right now.
Is that person allowed in the coaches' meeting? Coaches meetings?
Well, it depends on every organization. With the Baltimore Ravens, yes.
No, I know that. I'm asking about the Seahawks.
I don't
Sorry,
know.
I'm probing you for information.
Yeah, no, I don't know that in particular, but to my knowledge, I've never heard them once talk about analytics or having those types of people in that building and helping them make informed decisions.
That's interesting. I think one intangible that they definitely got covered is leadership. They've got that on offense. They've got that on defense.
Yeah.
And those guys, Stacey, I mean, you cover them in the locker room. Those guys will probably be around for a little while anyway, right?
You mean Bobby Wagner, Russell Wilson? Yeah.
Things like that.
I think so.
I mean, the quarterback's a funny position when it comes to leadership because, like, Brett Favre just wanted to be one of the boys, but he was still the best player they had, and everybody looked up to him. And if he wanted to be a leader, he probably was a leader in some sense. But Russell Wilson, I mean, we talk about teams taking on the personality of somebody. I don't know that you necessarily want to take on the personality of Russell Wilson, even though he's a guy that players will follow.
No, but how many times have we interviewed players and they've said, it's not like he gets you, I don't want to say he doesn't get you fired up. He's a consummate professional who always has a very calming mentality. Like, he's very calm, cool, collected on the field, and also keeps guys really positive. And there are a number of players we talked to that said that that was something that they felt like helped them when they were out there. And I think, too, when you become like Russell Wilson or these quarterbacks who have been great for several years in the league, you don't as much have to establish yourself as a leader when guys come in, because whoever they draft next year, whether it's an offensive lineman, a receiver, a tight end, someone coming in, they will have watched Russell Wilson when they were in high school, maybe even middle school.
Yeah, the leadership is built in. They probably come in expecting that I'm going to be looking up to this guy.
Right.
Because
it becomes a bit, I've obviously never been a quarterback, but I think the way you hear about players talk about Russell Wilson on the day that the Seahawks draft them, when we do those conference calls and we talk to them, they already know everything about him.
You've never been a quarterback?
Yeah, no, left tackle. That was where I started.
What about in fantasy?
You look at Russell Wilson and his personality. To me, what the strength of it is what Stacey said, that the calmness, the assurance, and the belief that you can come back at any moment in time because you've got that guy as your quarterback, and that his mentality rubs off on you. That it's, okay, yeah, we are never out of this fight, that we, you know, the preparation, you watch that guy in the building, first in, first, last out, you know, all the things that he does to get himself prepared, the infamous scouting report that he gives out to the offensive players.
It's really 15 pages, by the way.
That's what it says.
Jeez.
I mean,
all
the preparation that he does, it goes to show these guys what it takes to play in this league. But there's other personalities that can emerge from that. It's not one personality that's dominant over everybody else. And so I think you can have a Clowney take a even bigger leap in terms of his voice and his bravado, and guys like that, I think, are key for this team to really take that next step when you're talking about from an intangible standpoint.
I can't remember the last time I read 15 pages straight of anything. Can you?
Yeah.
Like what?
Like a book?
Like what book?
What
books are you reading?
I was reading the other day, oh gosh, I forget the title. It's like The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay or something.
What is that, a novel?
Mm-hmm.
That's not a good endorsement if you don't remember the title.
I just started
it. Sounds like a boring
No, I
book.
Just started it.
Are there pictures?
No.
No pictures?
Unfortunately not. Yeah. Oh, I also was gifted, my mom got me for Christmas the NFL's 100 year, that special edition, like coffee table book that they came out with the history of the league.
That's got pictures in it.
It has a lot of pictures in it.
The Adventures of Cavaliers and Clay, that sounds like the NBA Finals the last 5 years, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what it's about.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Is it? Oh, it's a sports book?
No.
Gee whiz.
Sorry.
We're in four down territory.
This is four down territory.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
We live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
We saw yesterday that Luke Kuechly retired. Jake, you think we're going to see more NFL players opt to retire before they're 30?
Now, I want to put this in perspective in terms of the NFL. I think you're going to see more, but that's going to be a relative number because it's few and far between, right? We talk about this trend, and you're looking at Andrew Luck, Doug Baldwin. You know, you've got Luke Kuechly.
What about that kid, Borland? From the
Chris
49ers,
Borland, that happened a couple years. That was back in
2015. Yeah, right around there.
Yeah, somewhere in there. So there's going to be instances along the way.
And Calvin Johnson.
Calvin Johnson's another one. I think you're going to see more of it as you go along, especially with how much money these guys are making and how much they can make in a short period amount of time, you know, into their second contract. But I still think it's going to be relative to the rest of the league. I still think the percentage is going to be extremely, extremely low because, one, you have a lot of guys that are still scratching and clawing their way to retain and be on rosters. And there's other guys that, look, the NFL is, in football, is the only thing that they know.
Yeah.
Is the only thing that they really have had a passion for and they want to cling to it for as long as they humanly possibly can. So there's these other guys in these unique positions where they have made a good amount of money. They can walk away on their own terms, and you applaud them for doing that. But I don't think it's going to be a, you know, sweeping trend that you're going to expect almost every star player to walk away before they're 30 years old.
Yeah,
why
would you get into football in the first place? I mean, I think most players get into it to A, play football, or A, make money, and B, to play football, right?
Absolutely. And Luke Kuechly,
He's had a lot of concussions.
He has, and he's had injuries. Luke Kuechly, just knowing his personality, He would love to play football till he's 35. But physically, he's at a point where he's just taken a toll on his body and said, okay, I'm going to walk away from this while I still can, and also while my body is in the physical condition it is, and not have it get any worse. So like I said, there'll be more of it, but it'll still be a very small percentage of it when you really look at the numbers.
You know how I know this season has felt 10 years long? Is it feels like 10 years ago that Andrew Luck had that surprise retirement announcement. I never would have thought that Andrew Luck and Luke Kuechly in the same year would step away.
Remember yesterday I had that quote from Andrew Brandt about how he didn't think that Kuechly's retirement was particularly early. He actually had another quote on Twitter I saw, which was a great one. He says, as I always tell players, football is not a career. It's a head start on a career. Tiny slice of life. If you think about it, in the amount of time that you play football compared to how long you're going to live, it really is a head start on a career. Like, you get to earn all that money up front from age, what, 22 to 30, 31, 32?
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got, I mean, hopefully you have all that money, you've saved it. Then you get to really start your life.
And you keep your mentals.
Yeah.
Your mentals.
In other words, protect your chicken.
Protect your chicken, Tom.
Second down. Stacey, what would you say Pete Carroll and John Schneider are doing right now?
Well, Pete Carroll was asked that question on Danny and Gallant. In this clip right here, he started explaining about just kind of what it looks like from the football operations side of things.
Understand that this is well underway already. You know, all of the plans for who we have to work with contractually and financially and all that kind of stuff. Acquiring talent happens with the draft, but free agency is coming up and all those kinds of all of those things are in motion. John's already had all of his meetings to set us in a position where we know what's out there, and the strategy and the plan is already in order.
So free agency starts in March. They've already got that underway. At the time when this interview took place, which was earlier this week on Monday, he said contract conversations hadn't yet started with Jadeveon Clowney, but that they obviously want him back. So those will presumably be underway here, at least the start of talks in the next couple weeks. So that's what it looks like on that side of things. They got 22 free agents to look at. Obviously won't retain all those guys, but all of those conversations start and have started with some of them. On the non-football operations side of things, they still have some coaching to do because they're going to be heading up the NFC team in the Pro Bowl on January 26th, January 26th.
What a drag.
It's going to be the Ravens on the other side of things representing the AFC. It's the two teams with the highest record that were eliminated from the divisional round of the playoffs. So that's what they have on their plate in the next, literally the next couple weeks.
Do you guys think that they want to do that?
Yeah, Pete Carroll sounded pretty excited about it. Obviously, he's not putting in maybe the most intense level of preparation they would have for a regular season or playoff game, but
Orlando.
Okay.
Yeah,
Camping World Stadium.
Yeah, it's fun, it's exciting, and also I think Pete Carroll also addressed the fact that I think it gives a good opportunity to reset your eyes.
Yeah,
you get
yeah.
caught up in your own team and what you look like, and maybe you're looking at Rasheem Green and oh he's doing good, but then you go to the Pro Bowl and you look at the Pro Bowl defensive ends in this league, and you're like, oh yeah, that's what those guys are supposed to look like.
That goes.
Yeah, you get a coach.
We need to get those guys.
Literally coaching Pro Bowlers. And you're going to go out and see what some of the best guys on other teams look like. What coach would love to do that? Yeah.
That goes back to what we were saying about outside perspective, though, too.
Absolutely.
Right, being around other ones. Third down. After studying the Packers and the 49ers this season, which team do you give the edge on Sunday?
Looking at these two teams just very objectively, I really think this matchup favors the 49ers in almost every way. The one area in which the Packers can overcome is if they can protect Aaron Rodgers and they can find mismatches with Aaron Jones and Davante Adams, they've got a chance. But I just look at the 49ers defense. They're too physical. Their pass rush is really elite. And they made Aaron Rodgers' night in the regular season one to forget. I mean, it was an absolute nightmare for him. And I think that the 49ers defense and Robert Saleh are going to do a better job than what the Seahawks did in terms of making sure Davante Adams doesn't have a career night. And on the flip side of it, the San Francisco 49ers were able to run the football against the Green Bay Packers. And I think that the 49ers have just continued to get healthier and healthier as the playoffs have gone on. So they're really a juggernaut right now, and I think it would take a superhuman effort from Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers for them to advance and go to the Super Bowl.
Fourth down. This question could really be a whole segment. What is
it really
not,
could.
What is not holding back Russell Wilson look like?
I think a very, very basic look at this is one that you go away from the notion that you have to establish the run game, that you have to be so stubborn about it from the beginning that your first, second down of every game or every drive has to be with the run. I think that they've shown at different points in time that you can give Russell Wilson the ball and have him set the tone and let the pass set up the run in that sense, and you're still able to be very physical, effective, and dynamic in the run game. So you're not taking attempts, you're not piling on more attempts for Russell Wilson. You're not taking away attempts from Chris Carson. You're just setting the game up very differently in terms of the aggression and the style in which you approach the first half. The other side of it is, I think you traditionally, under Russell Wilson since 2012, this offensive line that he has played under, pass pro efficiency has been towards the bottom of the league. They have never been in the upper half of the league. At best, I'll have to look at the numbers again, but I think at best they were around 15, maybe 18, and every other year they've been 25, 26, 27, 30. And that's been what he's been dealing with the majority of his career, and I think that that has to change it this offseason. They have to give him better pass protection for them to be able to be as successful as they can be moving forward.
Listen to our show on the 710 Sports app, powered by Dubin Law Group. Coming up at the top of the hour, that's 2 o'clock for you non-radio folks, we're going to take calls on this Pete Carroll thing and whether or not you guys have confidence in him moving forward. There is a group of people, whether it's just on social media or not, that are not comfortable with that. They want him fired. They want him out the door. Pete is not the right guy to handle Russell Wilson. He's wasting his prime, etc. Do you guys think that the number of calls we get will be a good indicator as to whether or not that's like a big deal?
I don't know.
We'll see.
Get one caller saying, yeah, I want him fired. Well, that tells me it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, the reaction I saw on Twitter after the game, there were a lot of people talking about
this. But were they talking to you? Because I didn't see any on that topic.
Yeah, but that was because I retweeted someone, so I was tagged in a lot of things. So it wasn't like talking to me, but there were a lot of mixed opinions. I think it was 60-40, maybe 70-30. On what are you talking about? Pete Carroll's the best coach they've had. But I think that I don't think the 30% are like idiots. I think that there are legitimate concerns they have. I just don't agree with all of them.
And you might, and on the flip side of it, you might get a lot of people that end up do calling that point out to all the positive things that Pete Carroll has done for this franchise. So, I mean, I think you're going to get both sides of it.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't want to talk to them. Yeah, I mean, you could look. You can present a great argument against a lot of the things that Pete has done or not done. I guess my take on it is that firing him is not the solution to those problems.
I don't agree either. Absolutely.
All right. Coming up next, the halftime show. The Astros are now wearing wires.
Howdy got him.
Yeah. Howdy got him.
Howdy got him.
Howdy like busted him this morning. We'll talk about that next in the halftime show. 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the halftime show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The halftime show, it's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Should the Seahawks fire Pete Carroll? Who was the last coach who made the playoffs who got fired for just performance reasons? Can anybody think of it? No. I mean, was it Marvin
Lewis?
Only
in the NFL?
Yeah.
Are you talking about just for performance reasons or like playoff performance?
I can't think of a
So you mean they made the playoffs but not in a way someone liked? Like they consistently... Okay.
Exactly. Like Marvin Lewis made the playoffs a lot with Cincinnati. Never won a game. But I think that ownership was cheap and they liked having him there. But they didn't actually fire him until that team sunk to maybe like 4-12.
What about someone like a Jeff Fisher who was just perpetually 9-7? Like people didn't like that the ceiling was 9 or 10.
You know what, Stacey? I think Jeff Fisher sunk lower than that.
Yeah.
To the point where the first one I could think of. Rams actually fired him.
It's like go back a couple more years, Andy Reid in Philadelphia.
He got to a point where they got tired of being in the position they were. Highly successful, right? But never could get them past a certain point. So yeah, I think that's a really good point right there.
Andy Reid went 8-8, 4-12, 2 years in a row. If Pete did that here, let's use that as an example. If he went 8-8 and then 4-12, missed the playoffs, obviously both years. How would you feel then?
He would be gone.
The thing is, though, it's not like he's getting. Yeah, people talk about it like he's getting 10 wins every year. Like he's been a 10 win season, but they've been a 12 win team. They've been a 13 win team. They had 11 wins this year. It's not like he's perpetually 10 wins in the wild card.
Well, lately it has been. Since 2014 or 2015, it has been.
Until they had 11 wins this year and went to the divisional round.
Yeah.
I feel like you can't just take off a year, especially when it's the most recent one. I don't think that's what you're doing, but I don't think you can just chop that off and say, well, outside of that, well, then you completely ignore what they did this year.
Yeah, I think it's a harsh way to judge the coach.
Yeah.
Look, if their overall performance, man, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but when it comes to the stats, if every one of them, especially defensively, were like trending downward over the last couple of years and they stayed there, but they were still winning 10 games, I might have an issue with that. Because, I mean, there is a theory that the reason why they won 11 games this year came down to luck. Just pure luck at times, right?
Yeah.
I don't think you luck into 11
wins. And people are putting more stock in Russell Wilson than they are in Pete Carroll, right? And I think that Russell Wilson is a huge part of that. And without him, you're looking at a 4-win team at best. So, yeah, but that's a difference between a major MVP caliber type of quarterback for any franchise. I think Pete Carroll, in this sense, when you're looking at it, they have been in a retooling, rebuilding process. They're still a part of that. And that this year, more than any other year, I think heading into season 11 for Pete Carroll, this is going to be a year that really defines the way that things are trending for him. If they continue to keep going on this route of wild card, divisional round, I think that people are going to get the swell is going to start coming a little bit more.
How long can that go on?
I think you're going to start feeling that pressure and that heat this next year because you look at Russell Wilson and his, you know, the prime of Russell Wilson's career. You talk about $60 million in cap space, 11 draft picks, all this capital that you've got, and you're not able to turn anything positive in it or improve this roster, improve this team. I think that's when you start really starting to question
it. I think those people, though, you're almost making their argument for them. Why not start questioning it now if you think you're wasting Russell's prime?
It's more of, do you think that,
why
that
wait
Pete Carroll, do you have the confidence that Pete Carroll can turn this into a Super Bowl contending team?
They don't.
I do. That's the difference.
So you
I think
that one year is going to make a difference.
I think with this capital that they have, with John Schneider, Pete Carroll, $60 million in cap space, you've got 11 draft picks. I think that they are in a better position more than any of the last 2-3 years to really put their team in the best position possible to get it done.
All right, we're taking your calls on this at the top of the hour. I'll give the number out right now. What the heck? 866-979-3776 or 206-421-3776. Should Pete Carroll be kicked out the door or should he stay indefinitely? Next story. The Mets have fired Carlos Beltran before he ever managed a game for them. Why? Because he was a member of the 2017 Houston Astros as a player and was involved in this sign-stealing scheme. And the Mets apparently didn't want to have the press following him around all year, asking questions about the whole thing. And they determined, really, that after having been part of it, he just couldn't lead a group of players. That's the big determination. For anybody involved in the story, AJ Hinch, Alex Cora, Carlos Beltran, you can't have them leading younger players now after they've been part of this whole thing. And the other part of the story that came out today, the Astros are now being accused of wearing electronic buzzers when they're up at the plate. And some guy in the back who's watching the video, he has a remote that's controlling the buzzing. If it's a fastball, buzz once. Curveball, buzz two, etc. I mean, this thing just gets weirder and weirder.
And not just any player, specifically pointing this accusation at Jose Altuve, and Bregman. So that's the first time that we've kind of heard this as, oh, this is a player-run thing, that this is kind of a hoaxy deal going on, and now this is the first time that you're having any type of accusation being pointed at star players of that Houston Astros organization.
Man,
I mean, that's...
This is so... You know, I wrote about this. I wrote a piece for 710sports.com. If anybody ever tells you, well, sign stealing's always been part of the game, ask them why nobody wants to talk about this particular episode. Like, when you ask a player about sign stealing, like when they're standing at second base, players will talk about that with you. It's been around so long that it's just sort of accepted, right? Players will talk about it and they'll admit to it. How come nobody wants to talk about this? Because they knew it was wrong.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they'd discuss it.
True.
Well, I think there's kind of this weird moral way to cheat that people have in sports.
Right. It's like
really anywhere, but no, really. It's like, I think people look at something like film study or if you're putting in the work in an industry, in a profession that so values putting in the work, if you're putting in the work to cheat and like studying signs and looking from far away and you're just that good of an athlete, you can pick up on it. It's almost like people are like, all right, tip of the cap to you. If you're having this whole scheme that starts from your front office who aren't even players and it feels like this systematic issue, then people think, well, wait a minute. Like, we weren't going that far. And that's unfair.
The players?
Yeah. I think the Astros, maybe I'm wrong, but
I think
the Astros are the only team using technology to the extent that they did.
Well, in this specific way, yeah, because Alex Cora is the one who devised it. And then, I mean, now the Red Sox are being investigated themselves. So we'll see if he took that specific system over to Boston. But that doesn't mean that other teams couldn't be cheating in other ways.
Am I
to believe that the only two teams that happened to get caught, like, were the only ones cheating?
No, every team, I think, toes the line. They're competitors. Crazy competitive people will get as close as they can to doing that.
I don't get it.
It'll be curious to see if there are other organizations that end up getting caught up in this stuff, because word gets out, just like one player. It takes one person from the inside to say something, and then it gets shown to light.
We got a little news on the two craziest but most talented wide receivers in the game. Coming up next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
I was just reading through Jeff Baker's mailbag here in the break on the Seattle Times.
You were?
Yes, I was.
Wow.
Well, somebody was asking him about...
Deep, dark corner of the internet.
About the team name for the Seattle hockey team. He's saying it's going to be announced in either late February or early March. But I'm just telling you right now, if they name this team Kraken...
It's not going to be Kraken.
I'm not supporting it.
It's going to be Sockeyes.
That's what he thinks, too.
It is not going to be the Kraken. I do believe it's going to be the Sockeyes.
I'm very pro-Kraken.
Why?
Why wouldn't I be? What kind of question is that? No, I'm very fine with it. I'm comfortable with it. I endorse it.
Why?
Because what do you mean, why? The name, the Kraken.
It's stupid.
No, it's not.
Baker's got it right here. He says,
it's the name of a monster.
I've never been a Kraken supporter. It screams gimmicky.
So
Amen.
You want to be a bottom feeder salmon over a sea monster that swallows whole ships?
I want to be a seal.
Well, now, sockeye is known for being one of the more delicate pieces of salmon meat. This more delicate, more fine
tasting. They're a beta salmon.
Tasting salmon.
It doesn't matter, though. I mean, like, look at
at least be a king salmon.
What about, like, the Pittsburgh Penguins? They're one of the all-time great franchises.
Penguins are wonderful. They mate for life, and they take care of their eggs. They have great parenting. Why wouldn't you want to be named after a penguin?
That team name is stupid when you first hear it. When the Sonics went, they became the Thunder. Stupid. Remained stupid. When the Pelicans started playing in New Orleans, awful, no good, very bad name.
It just kind of
grows on you, and you're like, okay, they're the Bobcats. Sure.
First of all, I
want it to be the Steelheads or the Totems.
You can't.
It can't be the Totems.
Why not?
That's Tyee's mascot.
There's a lot of rich history.
You can't do Totems.
There's a lot of rich history there.
I'm just saying, look, you got to have standards. And Kyle's right. You get used to whatever it is. I'm not getting used to Kraken.
No, Tom, and I'm not going to ask you to.
Thank you. All right.
I don't think it'll be that, though.
You want to be the Seattle Seals so badly. I don't even know when I saw a seal in Seattle.
And seal isn't much better.
You never seen a seal out there walking around?
At the aquarium.
No.
Never walking around on the streets. I've never run into a seal out
I
there.
I didn't mean walking. I meant swimming.
No.
I don't know a seal. I see it strutting down Pike Place all the time.
Yeah.
You can do that like in Mexico, but not around here. Drew Rosenhaus. This is kind of rare when you see this happen. Drew Rosenhaus has fired Antonio Brown as a client. When was the last agent who fired a player you saw? Does that happen a lot, Jake?
No, it does not happen a lot, but it does happen, and it's mostly because the client that they are working with is such a problem or such a pain in their you-know-what that they just can't do it anymore. And when you have a Drew Rosenhaus, I mean, honestly, he has done to try and mend fences and to make a lot of these horrific blows that Antonio Brown has done for his whole career.
Yeah.
I mean, he has tried to do everything that he can to get him back in the NFL, and Antonio Brown consistently, almost every single day, starts new fires that cannot be put out. So if I was Drew Rosenhaus, for my sanity, I think this should have been done a long time ago.
You see what he was doing the other day? He had a camera phone. And there were a bunch of cops outside of his house. I don't know if they were there for him or what. But he was just screaming obscenities at them. And then he posted it to Instagram.
Yeah, he's a guy that I will be very shocked and honestly disappointed if he's back in the NFL. Like, if an NFL franchise looks at Antonio Brown and says, yeah, we want this guy. Because right now, all that Antonio Brown has shown you is that mentally he's not stable. And that he's not going to be stable when he's within your franchise. I don't care how good of a football player he is.
Have you guys ever seen an agent fire a player for just bad performance on the field?
Like, you know what, man?
I like you personally, but you're not benefiting my firm because you're not very good.
No, what ends up happening is they just don't work as hard. So then the player has to go somewhere else. That typically is what ends up happening is you get put on the back burner. But that's at the very high level of agencies. Not every single agent operates at that level or has the luxury of doing that. You're talking about the top five, top 10 agencies in the U.S.
Like Jerry Maguire.
Yeah, like Jerry Maguire. He was part of a machine. But Jerry Maguire himself, now, he had to work hard.
He worked really hard for, what was his name, Rod Tidwell?
Yeah, correct. Show me the money, baby.
Yeah, it was his only client for a while there. New Orleans police issued an arrest warrant for Odell Beckham Jr. after he tapped an officer on the butt following LSU's win.
It just... I can't believe that this is a story.
I feel like it's
just
a story because it's Odell Beckham Jr.
It's ridiculous. I mean, he is absolutely... I mean, the decisions that you make, why on earth would you put yourself in this position? Like, do you feel like you're that untouchable?
I didn't know you could get arrested for
Wait. Is this really like a huge issue where the officer
has an arrest warrant out for him? The police have an arrest warrant
for patting the officer
Odell
on the butt?
Yep. They're naming it simple battery. Yes.
Never heard of that either, by the way.
Simple battery? I've heard that. I mean,
it's not complicated.
You can't touch a police officer like that, especially when they're on duty. I mean,
sophisticated battery.
I get it, but one, I think it's ridiculous, but two, it's just, Odell, what are you thinking? And then also handing LSU players, collegiate athletes, money. You're just handing them cash in front of all these cameras around him. Like, what are you doing?
Is it a male officer?
Yes, it's a male officer. It doesn't make any sense to me. And it's, for him making these decisions, one, it's not surprising because of the personality. But two, you just think that you'd be smarter than that. Like, it's not just you going around handing a bunch of cash. You're putting other athletes at your own school, at your alma mater that you say that you care about and that you're all about, you're putting them at major risk.
Yeah, he's an immature person. I mean, acting like a junior high kid. I didn't know you could get arrested for that, though.
Well, you can't do anything to a cop. I mean, you shouldn't be touching a cop.
You don't touch.
Someone texted that in, but I also agree with that. Like, you can't, an officer that's on duty, you can't push them or bump them or slap them or anything.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't do that either.
You got one texter in here, mad that we're going in on Odell Beckham Jr. Yeah, you deserve to have this type of criticism about you when you make dumb decisions like this. Like, it's not, you're not thinking right. You're not putting yourself in the position of, I am an NFL football player making a ton of money, and am I putting myself in bad positions? Yes, don't do stupid things.
Hey, by the way, I need to say something. Last year, I was the only one, I think maybe in the whole media, that supported the Giants trading Odell Beckham away. How's that looking now?
It's true, Tom. As everyone was clowning, was it Gettleman at the time that shipped him out of there?
Yeah, look, I mean...
You got one good player, you can't set him out.
Gettleman paying him before he traded him was stupid, I admit. Yeah. But they're much better off without him. And now they're he's the Browns' problem. 866-979-3776 or 206-421-3776. Should Pete Carroll be fired like some people are saying? We'll take your calls next. Tom, Jake, and Stacey, 710 ESPN Seattle.